Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at the coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
For years, I just dreaded going to the dentist. But at Advanced Dentistry, I don't have to.
First and foremost, they want you to feel comfortable when you walk in. Like, you'll feel it. Whereas in the past, I might have gone into the dentist and thinking, I might feel some pain at some point. But with IV sedation, it can be something that you don't dread.
If you've been avoiding the dentist because of fear, worry, or just not wanting to be judged, you're not alone. Visit NoFearDentist.com to learn how IV sedation can change your life.
Hello, everyone. You are listening to the Three Questions with Andy Richter. I'm Andy Richter, and I am very pleased today to have a legend, a comedy legend, a landmark, you know, like one of the faces on the Mount Rushmore of comedy. Mr. George Wallace is on today, and I'm so happy to have you on. I've been such a fan for such a long time. And we've met and everything, but we're mostly Twitter pals.
Yes, you know? Yes, yeah. Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's so good to be with you today, Andy, because and all that what you just said about me, I hope that just means you're old and you've been around for a while. And I love the way you did it because that's what I do for a living. I just lie. I have the greatest job in the world. I love lying and just making up stuff. I love it. It's so easy, isn't it?
I always say that, you know, that when people ask about my technique of acting, I say it's just lying.
It's just lying. You know, that's all I'm doing.
I'm not this guy. I'm not saying these, you know, I'm just saying these lines and trying to make people believe that I'm this guy, but I'm not really him. So it's just lying.
And they pay us to do it.
Mad.
Pay us to do it. And I just say, and one time, sometimes I have to tell the audience, I am so blessed to be able to do what I do. I just lie. And I did pray one time to God, let me be the greatest bullshitter in the world. But Trump kicks my ass in that department.
Yeah.
But
he does.
But I still like, yeah. So I try not to do any more jokes on him, but he's the greatest bullshitter ever. So
I know. I know. You don't want him to take up any more real estate, speaking of real estate, in your brain, in your mind, you know, in your soul, in the news. But the guy is like, he is something. I don't want to give it to him, but like, he really is a genius, an evil genius of a sort.
And evil. I'll go with the, I'm not going to give him any good. I'm not going to say genius. I just think he's I stick with the bullshitter because I'm a bullshitter, Andy, and all bullshitters know each other. I mean, we don't know each other, but we know each other.
Well, and I think the difference between good and evil bullshitters is that good bullshitters can admit to it. Like, and they know, know they're full of shit.
I know I'm full of shit. Don't mind spreading it and talking to you.
That's right.
Telling you that, but I'm not going to go, oh, trust me, unbelievable, like you've never seen before.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go that far.
Now, you're in New York City right now. You have a beautiful backdrop of Central Park behind you, which is, it's manufactured, but you are, in fact, on Central Park in New York City right now.
I'm where your old friend Conan O'Brien used to live. I'm at the building called the Majestic. He lived on 17 and 18, and it just pissed me off. And I said, I gotta outdo him. So I bought the top floor, Andy. I have 19 windows. So I'm looking at Central Park. I'm looking at, I can see Kennedy Airport, LaGuardia Airport. If I go to my backside, I see the Hudson River. And I see Newark Airport.
It's a floor through all the way to the back.
Yes. And I'm enjoying, I'm in New York City. And Andy, New York, this city is really, really good. And by the way, it's my first time being here in 18 months because of the pandemic. I was away. I live in Las Vegas, but I spent the last 18 months in the city of Atlanta. But I'm up here. This is my first week. I came here a week ago and I got on stage. My best friend was on stage. I said, I'm going to watch you tonight. You know who my best friend is,
Gary.
45 years. So Yeah. He's on stage and he says,
Jerry Seinfeld, for people who don't know.
He's done 30 minutes and he says, well, that's it for me. And now I'm going to bring up to the stage my friend of 45 years. I said, you son of a bitch. Andy, I says, he knows I have nothing. Right? He says, coming to the stage. And I'm going, you are kidding me. He said, Jerry's talking about me. But at the same time, I'm up. Walking to the stage, proudly,
yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah.
And we get up on stage, and we just had fun. I had so much fun. And one night, I said, I'm back.
Yeah.
But I'm in New York. What a great city. Life is so good, man. I wish you could be here. Everybody could be in New York. It is awesome.
Now, is that something like when somebody says, come on up here, and you got to do, and now how long were you up there?
I was up there about 10 minutes. They don't. When we walk in, they pretty much let us do a little time, these clubs, you know,
just let us
do what we want to do.
But is that really nerve-wracking to not be prepared and then to kind of just go up there? Or do you just kind of fall into just...
You fall into greatness. Let me tell you something. You fall into greatness. Andy, most people don't do what they like doing.
Yeah.
But this comedy for me is my sex and it's my drugs. There's no place for me to be ever than to be behind that microphone or the floor underneath me at a comedy club.
Yeah.
I don't know these people. They don't know me. And we're doing the greatest thing in life. What are we doing? We're laughing. We're bringing people together.
Yeah.
Nobody has a better job than me. Laughing.
Yeah, no, I've always said, you know, I mean, there's a lot of bullshit in show business and there's a lot of
stuff. Don't you ever forget that. Whatever you do, if anybody out there, if anybody want to get in the show business, remember, half it is going to be, well, 40% can be your talent, but 60% is going to be bullshit.
Yes.
Just make that perfectly clear.
Yes. And and a lot of humiliation and a lot of rejection. But ultimately, I do come back to the fact that we are basically, it's the base level of an expression of happiness. Like what,
happiness.
When you're happiness is, nobody's laughing when, I mean, in the movies, evil people laugh, but even then they're happy.
Exactly.
But yeah, it is like we're making people happy. You know, that's the ultimate goal. That's our product. And it's hard to feel too shitty about it. People still
You're talking about making people happy. Our job is more important. You know what I do? You know what you do? We do better than doctors. We make people feel good.
Yeah.
People go to doctors, they are feeling bad. When they come out of that office, they feel bad. But that's one thing we can do. We can make you smile. And there's nothing better than a smile. You can't even fake a smile without feeling better. You try.
Yeah, yeah.
You
yeah,
can't.
Yeah.
Look at you. Look at you right now. Look at that smile on your face.
And I felt good. I felt good before I smiled.
But when you start smiling, that's when you're smiling. When you're smiling,
it's the whole world smiles at you.
Yeah, it's just great to do what we do. But I'm in this great city of New York, and it's bad. People are eating on the streets, and I made a mistake. It's not bad, but it's on its way back.
It's on its way back.
It's way back, and I guess by September and November, when theater is back, more people will be here. But we are having fun in New York City. And the clubs are packed.
You were in Atlanta for the pandemic, and that's your hometown. And is that what did you go back there because you got family there, or for the pandemic it was just a more comfortable place to go?
I have all my families there, but don't you laugh at me. But I went back because I didn't know what the virus, how bad it was going to be, how bad it's going to spread. But I'm thinking I'm going to go back for safety precaution because that's where the CDC is located, the headquarters of the CDC. No, Andy, stop laughing at me. Because I said, if they can cure Ebola, they can cure this disease. So I want to be somewhere near.
So you can just drive over and say, come on, cure me.
Listen, I'm on the top floor in Atlanta, too, and I look, my view is right into the CDC center. And I swear to God, that was my thought, man. I said, I just want to be near. If they come up with a cure, I want to be near the cure.
But did you drop in there day to day and say, how's it going, fellas?
How you guys doing?
Yeah. When can I go back to Vegas?
And my personal doctor became Dr. Murthy.
Always
on things. Yeah. So that was very nice. Very nice.
Oh, that's great. Now, you were born in Atlanta and you grew up there.
That's where I got a lot of come froms, man. I come from the greatest city in the world. I'm from Atlanta. I come from the greatest family in the world. Don't get me talking about them. I'm the most blessed person you have ever met. Andy, I'm the most successful entertainer you've ever met. It's not how much money you make, it's how you enjoy your life while you're living, okay?
Yeah.
And I've done everything. I've worked everywhere. You got more questions. I just say I'm from Atlanta, Georgia. Have you ever been there?
Oh, yeah. I've been there a number of times. Yeah.
Okay.
It's the only thing I don't like about Atlanta is that they tore down too much and built too many high rises there. You know what I mean? Like even from when I was there, because I had my aunt lived there when I was a little kid.
Where are you from?
I'm from Illinois. I'm from middle of northern Illinois, a town called Yorkville, kind of straight west of Chicago. But for as much as we, you know, scared whiteys went to Chicago, we might as well have been 3 hours away.
But you just make your way to Patillo's in Chicago. As long as we didn't get to Patillo's, that's good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, that was everywhere. Portillo's is just everywhere. You know, every corner has an Italian beef, Vienna beef hot dog stand, you know, and they're all the same.
That's good.
It's good heart attack food. That's
but Atlanta, they did, you think, I don't know, have you been there lately? If you thought they built a lot of buildings, they're building a lot now.
It is absolutely
crazy. It's traffic. But it's still a beautiful place. It's a beautiful place. And I live 1 mile from where I was born.
Oh, wow. No, it's a gorgeous place, but it's just, there's not a lot of old, you know, like the old buildings are all kind of like.
We got nothing.
Yeah.
Did you say old? We got nothing. I lived there, listen to me, they built, the Atlanta Braves went to Atlanta in 1965.
Uh-huh.
So they built a brand new stadium, okay? And then that stadium was up until the Olympics came in 1996.
Or 96, oh, right.
96, the Olympics, they built a brand new stadium. So that stadium, they tore it down. It was a brand new stadium. Now we got a brand new stadium in Atlanta, just 3 years old. Nothing is old in it. There's no antiques in Atlanta, nothing.
The
arenas, all less than 20 years. We had a place called the Georgia Dome where they play football. Brand new, tore down. So you're right, there's no history in Atlanta whatsoever.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything's new.
But you're right. It is a beautiful town. It's like a park. It's like living in a park. I think it's weird. It's weird for people that come from other cities because, except for maybe Los Angeles, because it doesn't feel really centered somewhere.
It's not centered because people are coming to Atlanta from everywhere. And you particularly mentioned Los Angeles. Right now, people coming to Atlanta from everywhere. New York City, they're selling their bike. You know what? You lived in Los Angeles. You know.
Yeah. They got there now. Yeah.
You know, a shack in West Hollywood is worth $500,000.
Yes.
Right? The worst house in West Hollywood is worth $600,000-$800,000.
Yeah.
They're selling these places and they're moving to Atlanta buying a brand new home for $500,000 and they got money in the bank. So Atlanta, and especially for African Americans, it is the city. Atlanta. Yeah. It's AAA. Atlanta, African Americans. And I even tell people now on stage, have you ever been to Africa? Do you want to go to Africa? If you want to go, I'm going to teach you how to get there and it won't cost you as much money. You call Delta Airlines and they will fly you to Atlanta.
Yeah.
And I leave it right to
you. Yeah, yeah.
and you won't know the difference, trust me. My friend Stevie Wonder, that I go to church with, he just announced that, you know, after the George Floyd incident, that he didn't see the what's happening in America. He wanted to leave America and move to Africa. So that's what Stevie Wonder said. And you know, me being a smart ass, we're going to drop his ass off in Atlanta. He won't know the difference.
It's hot.
It's hot and steamy.
You know.
And they talk funny. They got a place in Atlanta called College Park, and there's no college. There's no park. But Atlanta is a great city, and especially for, you know, not only a great city, let's make this perfectly clear. Atlanta is the number one movie making capital of the world. Not LA anymore.
Right, right.
So you see what's happened there.
All the different locations go through it where they do these tax incentives to make it cheap for people to make movies there. And Atlanta's going through that right now. You know, I'm always. It makes my daughter's 15. And when we watch movies, I'm always getting on the IMDb to see where things are filmed and stuff. And she's like, put your phone down, watch the movie. But I love to know where things are shot, and all kinds of stuff is shot in Georgia now.
Well, finish reading, seeing your movies, not always on TV show, Made in Georgia.
Yeah.
Yeah. with the peach there. So we're proud of our state. And we got a lot of good things out of my city, believe it or not. I'm born and raised. You know, that's the home of Coca-Cola, number one.
Yep.
Okay, that's the home of Chick-fil-A, number one.
Yeah.
Food brands. That's home of Delta Airlines, right now, number one airline.
Yeah, yeah.
UPS.
And all the Turner stuff, you know, all the Turner network, CNN,
all that. So we have a great city there.
We did a week of shows there. I'm terrible with remembering what year, but it was, I don't know, maybe 7-8 years ago. It was when the NCAA finals were there.
Just a few years back, but 10 years back, something like that.
I think it was less than that, but yeah, it was great. You know, I shot a bunch of stuff over at the bit that I did was that I was going to go sample different things in Atlanta. And the first stop was to go to the set of The Walking Dead, and they made me up like a zombie.
Really?
And then I went to all the other things dressed as a zombie, like to the Coca-Cola Museum dressed as a zombie.
Really?
And to the aquarium dressed as a zombie, and, you know. So oh, man, it was fun, true. Yeah. It was fun.
I haven't gone to that aquarium yet. I hear it's really nice.
It's ridiculous. It's beautiful. Absolutely. One of the best. And my family, we go to aquariums. That's my kids. Started with my son. My son was very much into aquariums. So we've been to all of them.
I'm going to have my birthday.
Yeah.
You went to Japan. I'm going to have my next birthday in the Georgia Aquarium.
Yeah.
So they have the fish all around, you know. And
it's beautiful.
It's going to be great. So.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you grew up there. Did you grow up in a big family?
Listen to me, Dylan. Did I grow up in a big family? Both my grandmothers had 21 kids.
Oh, wow.
And that's 42 kids. And I always like to have a joke. I saw my grandmama last week and she's pregnant right now. But let me just say, crazy glue couldn't keep my grandma's legs together. I mean, hey, Andy, did you grow up in a nice family? Because I did. I have the greatest family in the world. And it's huge. And we continue to have family reunions. And my family reunions are like 600 plus.
Yeah. Are you the funniest one, or are there people there? Because I find a lot of comedians say, oh, if you want to meet somebody funny, you should meet my cousin or you should meet my brother. They're funnier than me.
You should have met my Uncle Bo. My Uncle Bo was a crazy man. And I do his jokes right now.
He's
the type of guy who would ask you a question and answer it at the same time. Mm. How y'all get up here, walk? He would ask you a question. Where your dad at work? What time you get off? 6 o'clock? What your kids doing at home? Ain't no school today?
Yeah.
Why you ain't talking? Cat got your tongue? I could just keep going like that. What's your mama cooking? Chicken? Who new car that is in the driveway? Is that yours? But my Uncle Bo was crazy. And he would say stupid stuff like that. Atlanta Braves? Man, the Braves can't play ball. They can't play baseball worth a damn. That's my wife, Ruby. When I played ball, I was a backstopper. That's how old he is. High end catcher, right?
Yeah,
he said, Andy, I swear to God, my Uncle Bo said, you know when that boy steals first base going down to second? He said, I wouldn't throw that ball down there. I'd run down there and tag his ass out. That's my wife. And he would always Andy, he would end every sentence. Ask my wife, Ruby. She'll tell you. Ask my wife, Ruby.
That's, you see, he understood getting a catchphrase, you know.
Ask my wife, Ruby. And Ruby would always say, Bo don't know a damn thing. Bo is just lying. And he'd tell her, you shut up. Ain't nobody ask you nothing. He would ask her, and she would answer. Then he said to her, ain't nobody ask you nothing.
Want the same expert advice you get from the pros in the store while shopping online at DiscountTire.com? Meet Treadwell, your personal online tire guide that matches you with the perfect tire for your vehicle. Get your best match in 1 minute or less with Treadwell by Discount Tire.
Get ultimate protection and durability for your painting project at Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening, smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today.
Save big money at Menards.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network. So whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Can't you tell my love's a-growing?
So I grew up in a great family.
Yeah.
Funny family. My dad, my parents, and we grew up in a family of seven kids.
Wow.
Just a great home. And
What does your dad do? I mean, I imagine with seven kids, your mother raised kids.
Pretty much. And They were knocking them out. They were knocking them out every year after year after year after year. And I'm like 7 years younger than my next brother, and I'm a mistake baby.
Oh, but, yeah. You're a blessing. You're a miracle baby.
Oh, they say number seven is good.
A caboose. Number seven is good. Yeah.
Yeah, and my dad was a butcher.
Oh,
my dad
wow.
was the greatest man in the world, butcher, and worked for Swifton Company. You know, the Swift turkeys and
sure,
all that.
Sure, sure, yeah.
He was a butcher, and they had meats. What do you call them, butchering cows? You know, they did that in the Midwest.
A meat cut, absolutely, yeah. Like a big processing plant, and a carcass comes along, and you break it down, yeah.
And they kill the cows and kill the pigs and everything, and then they make the meat and send out to the grocery. So I grew up at home with plenty of meat, lots of meat.
A freezer full, yeah.
A deep freezer, not just a freezer, a deep freezer. And Andy, we didn't know, my mom would have, we have steak like four times a week, and so we have steak for breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to have to say, Mom, would you please stop? But we didn't know what that was. As young kids in grade school and high school, would you please stop with the beef? We had the cube beef. It's always meat in the house, and people would come by our homes and for dinner.
Yeah.
Just meat like you won't believe. So as far as food is concerned, we had it made.
The perspective, your perspective on what is plenty is the thing that you get sick of. Because like I was reading some book. It was a history book, and it was about something else, but it was about fishing. And in like Newport, Rhode Island in the 1800s, if you've ever been to Newport and seen those giant mansions, you know, along the ocean.
Yes.
There.
And up in that area, the New England, the Cape Cod and all those.
Yeah. It's huge mansions, rich, rich people. And lobsters were so plentiful. You could practically just walk out and pick up a lobster.
Just, you're right.
It was illegal to serve them to your servants. Like it was considered like serving them bugs.
Too much. Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah, it was because there were so many of them, and they did. You know, I mean, they are basically big bugs. You know, it was illegal to give your servants lobster. And
everything is the opposite. You know, black people have been eating chicken wings for years,
mm-hmm.
and about 20 years ago, white people going, well, what the hell is a buffalo wing? And all of a sudden now. You can't have a party without having chicken wings.
Yeah.
So that's amazing. From
life
is good.
When did you think like I'd like to do comedy for a living? When did that kind of start to settle in for you? And what was the inspiration for that?
Boy, what a great question. You want to know something?
Yeah.
6 years old.
Wow.
6 years old. There's a man that you don't know him. His name is Red Skelton.
Oh, Red Skelton. I know who Red Skelton is, sure.
There you go.
Yeah.
Red Skelton came on TV. There was a guy named Milton Berle came on TV. There were some party records. We had a man, his name was Red Fox.
Uh-huh.
There was a lady named Moms Mabry. That was another comedian named Judge Pete Meek Markham. That's where the phrase, here come the judge, here come the judge. That's where that came from.
Yeah.
Then the Richard Pryors and the Dick Gregors and, of course, the George Kirby's and Johnny Carson and everybody.
Yeah.
I keep going. And
Bob Newhart. Yeah,
come on.
Bob Newhart. Yeah, that Button Down Mind. That album.
That was the
amazing.
Man named Milton Berle would kill us every Tuesday night at the Texaco Theater, man. So I used to just love to laugh. And Andy, at 6 years old, 7, 8, 9, 10 through 12, I would listen to those jokes and I would take them back to school the next day and do them in class. And people would just laugh. And when you see people laughing, that makes you happy.
Yeah,
makes you happy. When I see happy people, it makes me happier. So I knew from 6 years old, this is what I want to do. I went through high school, and Mr. O'Neill on the football team says, Wallace, why don't you play football with us? You know you can play. I said, Mr. O'Neill, I'm going to be a bullshitter when I grow up. And don't need me wasting my time. And I said that to him at that time, and you didn't curse back in the day.
Right.
To you know, and I said, and he said, Wallace, you're crazy. I said, Mr. O'Neill, that's just what I'm going to do. Because all my brothers played football, and they would come home with broken arms. And actually, you're talking about my family. I actually have 7 Super Bowl rings in my family.
What?
That's how blessed we are. Sometimes I don't talk about these things. My brother, George Wallace Jr., is one of the first black professional golfers in America.
Wow.
He played with Charlie Sifford. All those guys used to stay at our house, Charlie Sifford and all of the black golfers back in the day.
Calvin Pete.
There you go. Yeah. They all stayed in our house when I was a kid. Because you heard the book. It's called The Green Book. Uh-huh. Black people didn't have certain places to stay.
Sure,
but
sure.
They stayed in my home.
Oh, wow.
So my family
Was your house in the Green Book? So did you have like strangers coming by, or was it just golfers?
I'm such a liar. I almost said my mama did just to make the joke. Okay.
Yeah.
No, but we had, and we didn't have a big house either. We just shared, you know, we had some extra beds and somebody moved over. People slept together back in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. We shared beds back in the day, but we had that. And I was a kid watching those shows and I wanted to be a comedian. So my brothers wanted to be sports people. My thinking is crazy. I want to be a comedian just watching all of those shows and taking the jokes back to school. And I was talking about, yesterday was my birthday, and I was talking to my first.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. I saw that, and I was going to wish you a happy birthday, and you beat me to it. I'm sorry.
Well, you're late.
I'm late. The present's in the mail, I swear.
You do lie. My fourth grade school teacher, she used to call me in the room and says, my real name is Henry Wallace. She said, Henry, tell me a joke. And I would tell her a joke like, why do Eskimos wash their clothes in tide? She said, I don't know. I said, because it's too cold out tide. Just little stupid jokes like that. She would look at me and she says, you know, that's not the kind of joke I want to hear. She wanted a dirty joke. You know, I'm a little boy. I'm going, and I would tell her the dirty joke and she would perk up. I was talking to her yesterday. I still know all my school teachers that are still alive.
Andy. Oh, wow.
We still talk to each other.
Oh, that's so great.
I was telling jokes in the fourth grade and that's where my comedy started. And I'm living my dream. I've reached my goal. I came to New York City. I went to college first because I needed to, because hearing those stories from the older guys sometime in Bonneville, they had no place to eat. I didn't know what they were going to do. I said, I don't need to go through that. So I wanted to get a financial question. I went to college and got a few degrees.
That was in Ohio, right? You moved to Ohio? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. My mom died and I went to school in Akron, Ohio and studied there.
What prompted that move? What about your mother's death prompted that move to Ohio? And why Ohio?
You bring that up. There's a reason for everything in life. Okay, I'm 7 years apart from my next brother. I'm a mama's boy, okay? So my mom had passed away. Had my mom not passed away, I don't think I would be a comedian because I'm a mama's boy.
Oh,
I would
stay
right there in Atlanta and just dealt with my peers and probably got a job at General Motors like everybody else
did. Been the funniest guy at General Motors, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Making fun of those Eldorados coming off the line.
That's right.
And those El Caminos and things coming off the line. But yeah, there's a purpose in life for everything. My mom left my house. She says, Junior, baby, I'm going to the hospital. I will not be back, but don't you worry about a thing in life. Your life has already been taken care of. And I'm thinking, okay, Mom, she's going to go to the hospital like everybody else and come back. She didn't come back. Mm. But everything is laid out for me. And I can't tell you how blessed I am. I went to Akron, Ohio. I went to school. I started working at a place called Firestone Tire and Rubber Company.
Oh.
Making $1.47 an hour.
What was the connection to Akron?
We had family there.
Oh, I had family.
The most important thing was that after high school, I wanted to get a degree in transportation. Uh-huh. Not a lot of schools offered that program. Wisconsin, University of Wisconsin, and the University of Akron had that program, transportation program. And to this day, most people don't know what a degree is, or would be, or can be in education.
And was it highway planning? Was it that kind of thing? You know, like city planning? What's a transportation degree?
There you go. And I said, does anybody know I have a degree in transportation? People in the audience says, are you a bus driver? And I said, get up. I'll throw them out. Get up. Get out of here right now. Transportation, and people don't know about this, it happens to be the number one industry in the world. People fail to realize the shirt on your back, the desk, the glasses you're wearing, everything you see transportation is involved, yeah, the procurement of goods and services.
Logistics.
Logistics. We haven't heard that word in a long time since UPS changed their slogan to logistics. It didn't work.
They
should keep with the slogan. They have a slogan called, "What can Brown do for you?" Nobody will ever forget to stick with the subjects. And I used to say, "What can Brown do for me?" First thing Brown can do for me is move their truck out of the middle of the street, okay? You want to do me a favor? Run this over to FedEx. Yeah. That's a good joke I used to do. But yeah, so I wanted to have a degree in transportation. The University of Akron offered that degree. And to this day, they're buying most of transportation. I have to get to it. I love to teach people about transportation. It's the greatest thing in the world. Airplanes, water, pipeline, trucks, and rail.
Yeah.
I'm also transportation. So that's number one industry. So that's what really took me to Akron, Ohio. And I got to Akron, I lived with my sister, and then I found a new mom. They took care of me. And at Firestone Tire and Rubber had a financial assistance program. So you go to school, they pay you for your courses.
Oh, wow.
So then I got grants and degrees. I have 3 degrees, and I think you're not going to believe this. I think I may have paid maybe $5,000 for the 3 degrees.
Yeah.
And I stayed in the dorm, so I was blessed to be in the dorm for one quarter, and the next quarter I was a RA resident. We used to call them advisors at the time.
Right.
And you have to be a junior before that happens. But I was blessed to one quarter, and that means food and board and everything like that.
Wow.
So you're talking about blessing. Don't you talk about where I come from. I could just go on and on and on. So that's how I got to Akron, Ohio. And then I was there doing my latter days as when LeBron James was a kid at the St. Vincent High School.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, so, did you start doing comedy in Akron, or did you have to wait till because you went to New York then, right?
Well, no, I start doing comedy, like I say, in school, in high school, in grade school, growing up. But you really start to get into it a little bit when you get to college and you're hosting the shows.
Oh, I see.
So I was hosting some of the social programs in the dorm system. I was in charge of everything, Andy. I was in charge of the University of Akron. I was one of those guys that I was the dorm council, but I was in between the administration and the students. I was on the student dorm, what do you call it, student council?
Yeah.
But I represented the students also. I'm the guy that goes to the president's office. President Norman Auburn, this is George Wallace, I want to talk to the president's secretary. He says, he's busy. I said, well, you tell him I'll wait. It's Henry Wallace, I'll wait. And so, but I was one of those guys on the campus, the BMOC, but the big man on campus, they called it back in the day.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I made everything happen. I was there doing the Kent State riots.
Oh, wow.
So I was there, and I had to pull that program together and brought everybody together. So townies, dormies, and everybody, I made a program called Together. That was right after the Kent State shootings. And the next night, Kent State and Akron U are like 20 miles from each other, 25 miles from each other.
Yeah.
And the next night, we were out there protesting, and the National Guards were out there, and man, they clicked those guns, and we scattered.
Yeah.
Amazing. So that's why I was in Akron, and I was telling jokes there. Then I left Akron, Ohio, and I graduated and came to New York, and I got a job. I needed a job, and I was reading the papers. That's when you read the papers to get a job.
Yeah.
The want ads.
Yeah.
I got a job. Yeah. There was an ad that said $75 to $150 a day. And I said, let me take a look at that. Look at this. And I went and interviewed for the job, and it was Cleveland Cotton Products. They sold rags. I sold actual rags, Andy.
Wow.
I sold the ShamWow back in 1972 before it had a name. Before it had a name. I sold real rags. And then after that, I was selling rags to the New York City Transit System. And then I became, I went to work for Metro Transit, a guy named Douglas Lee. Douglas Lee invented the smoking cigarette at Times Square. So I became the vice president of the world's largest outdoor advertising agency.
Wow.
Everything at Times Square. I'm turning this way because I'm actually looking at Times Square now.
Yeah.
Times Square. So all the spectaculars, billboards downtown Times Square, all the 5,000 buses in New York City, all of the buses in Chicago, Detroit, Cleveland, Los Angeles, San Francisco. We had a board even in Chicago smoking cigarettes.
I remember that when I was a kid. It was a Marlboro. Yeah. There was a Marlboro man, and smoke would come out of his mouth. Yeah.
Well, at your age, I was probably working.
I was born in 66. Yeah. So that probably, that's when I would have been seeing that. It was 7, 8 years old, probably.
Yeah. So I was 7, 8. That was in 71, 72. I was doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was a sales job. It was, you know, going around and getting them to put.
I was selling advertising. Yes, I was doing cold sales, and I was making a lot of money. And guess what? That's the same thing I do when I go on stage every night right now. I'm making a sale when I sell a joke.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and I made a lot of money in advertising, and I went into a place, a new comedy club opened called The Comic Strip. And I went out and said, let me put you on the back of every other bus going up and down 2nd Avenue in New York City, 2nd and 3rd Avenue, in your community. You need to put your business in the streets. Rich Tinkin and John and Bob Wax, mm-hmm. they own the club. And I signed that deal. I said, we'll put you on the buses. And by the way, I do a little comedy act. I had nothing.
Bullshitter.
Why don't you come back tomorrow? I was bullshitting, right?
Yeah,
come back tomorrow night. Let's see what you got. I auditioned on a Thursday, and I've been on stage ever since. Wow. And I started doing, I was a preacher. I was Reverend George Wallace, because I made fun of the church at the time. And man, what a blessing. I've been on stage ever since. And every night I just have fun. And that's why I met Jerry Seinfeld in 1976. Yeah. We became best friends. And to this day, we're still best friends. And we celebrated last night my birthday. We're into our 46th year, and we're still best friends, no matter what. This is great. I'm the most blessed person you've ever met.
Why the change of your name from Henry to George?
Because I was so stupid. When I got to Los Angeles, and I wanted to join the union, there was already a Henry Wallace.
Ah.
So I didn't even know. I just went, oh, my God. So I said, okay, I'm gonna give him my dad's name, George Wallace.
Yeah.
I wasn't even thinking about the governor of Alabama at the time. Because dad was George Wallace, and my older brother was George Wallace Jr.,
right.
But I just took the name George Wallace, and it stuck. And
people just thought they were going to get the segregationist governor come up on stage when they announced you.
My first Tonight Show, Johnny Carson says, and he was laughing as he said it, don't change your television sets. George Wallace, and I come out, and I couldn't even talk for the first minute because people were,
laughing.
I said, hey, Lula May, don't change the stage. Come here, Lula May. George Wallace on television. You know what I'm saying?
Get ultimate protection and durability for your painting project at Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today.
Save big money at Menards.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Can't you tell my love's a-growing?
Now, when you started doing I imagine it was probably a gentle skewering of the clergy when you were doing a reverend. Did that get you in hot water with anybody?
No, because it was a lot of fun. I had the robe on and everything. And guess what I had, Andy? I had the thick yellow pages telephone book.
Yeah.
That was my Bible. It was called the Good Book of Bell. Whatever you need, look it up in the book. Look it up. You want some shoes, look it up in the book. It's all in the book.
Yeah.
And I just went along with that, and then I would tell jokes with the rope on. I would enter the room singing, when the saints go marching in, and the whole room would just, and you know, back in the day, we had to catch Riding Star and the Coming Trip. We had a band on stage, and the place would just go crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, when the saints go marching in.
Oh, that's an entrance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I didn't even have jokes, man. I was borrowing jokes at the time. You know, when you first start, you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Just trying to make some money. And
well, I didn't even do stand up. I didn't like homework, so I didn't want to have to go home and write stuff. So I did improv. Because then you're part of a gang, you know, you're up on stage with other people.
What did you say about homework?
He just pulled out a pad that's full of jokes.
This is my yellow pad. I'm the guy that's known for taking a pad on stage. I know some other guys have done it, but back in 19, I'm the guy that's known for taking the yellow pad on stage going, I got some new jokes here. Some might be funny, might not be. I don't give a shit. I'm doing these new jokes. Actually, I did Arsenio one night. I took the pad out in 1993. I took the pad out. I said, I'm going to do some new jokes on this show tonight. I got Letterman next week. I got to make sure this shit is funny. You know?
Yeah.
Right in front of So, and then I take it up on stage now, and I got some new jokes might be funny, and I'll say, joke number one, worked real good.
Yeah.
Joke number two, worked real good. Joke number three, needs work.
Yeah.
Needs work. And the audience go, yeah. Said joke number four, work good. Then I get to like joke number five. Joke's funny, audience sucks. They go crazy. They go crazy. And then I said, okay, let me go to my act. You know what they would say? Go do the pad, man.
Yeah.
Go back to
Stay
the pad.
Stay back on the pad.
They love helping out with the jokes. And to this day, I love doing new jokes. And my personality, if the joke is not funny, that's really funny to me.
Yeah.
To be able to say, I need to work on this joke. What can I do? And just have some fun with it.
Right.
Every night I go on stage and I do something funny and something different, you know?
Now you mentioned that because, you know, your personality. I mean, and so much of your life, just listening to you go through it, it's the strength of your personality that you just kind of said, okay, I'm here, recognize me, put me to work. You know, I mean, whether it's student council or, you know, being in college and you know, doing protests against, you know, against the war and selling it, going into a place and saying, you're going to put stuff on buses. Where does that confidence come from? I mean, is there a source or were you born with it? Did you come out bullshitting?
I think the source came from my dad. My dad, George, the real George Wallace.
Yeah.
Here's a guy that had a second grade education, could not read, and wound up being president of the PTA.
Wow.
And he was in charge of the community. And back in the day in Atlanta, when I was a kid, he was making, I told you he was a butcher. He was making $2.50 per hour. He would be at work at 5 o'clock in the morning. You know, butchers get off. They're like construction workers. They get off at one. So he started his own business as a contractor building houses. So he was making double money there and making things happen. And we were that man. And he was that man in the neighborhood, Mr. Wallace. He can do it. In the churches, Deacon Wallace, he can do it. Whatever money they wanted to raise, Mr. Wallace could do it. The community, Mr. Wallace could do it. That's how he became president of the PTA. And couldn't read.
Yeah.
But he got things done. He made people happy. We built a garden in the neighborhood of about 3 acres. And people, the whole community ate off the garden. And my dad was always doing something funny. And he's just crazy. And he was a strict man, too. When I was a kid, my dad was so good. He could just make us laugh. And he would piss us off. And after he would piss us off, and he would always say, now, come on, give me a little smile, boy. Give me a little smile. And then come on, you can give me a little smile. You can do it. You can do it. You can do it. Give me a little smile. I know you're going to smile for me, and pretty soon you break, you know?
Yeah,
and he would do stupid shit like, I live up here, you live down there. Come up to see me sometime.
So for people without the video, you're touching underneath your nose and then your chin and then doing the...
I live up here. You live down there.
Yeah.
Come up to see me sometime. That would make him so mad.
Yeah.
But he would do that. He would do my mom. My mom would bake a cake and she would say to him, how's the cake? I don't know. Give me another little slice. And she'd give another slice. And he'd eat like 3 slices. She says, is it okay? How's the cake? He'd go...
Yeah.
That means, you know.
Yeah, just okay.
After 3 slices.
Yeah, yeah. It's all right. Yeah.
She knew what that meant after 3 slices.
Right.
He was always joking. He would joke with me, man. He said, Dad, can I use the car? And he'd go, I said, Dad, can I use the car? I knew that was not a yes.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
Come on, man. Can I use the car? So I got that.
But that's wonderful. So there was no choice. You had to be involved. You had to, you know, it just wasn't, acceptable to sit at home and do nothing.
To this day, whatever it is, I'm going to be somewhere around the top and it's going to be with laughter and fun. That's why I, you know, I could have been a minister. I should have been a preacher, make a lot of money. Like Joel Osteen. Joel Osteen is the greatest comedian in the world. Joel Osteen never starts a sermon without doing what? Telling a joke first. I always like to start with a little funny story. So I could have done that. I really think Congress should be loaded with comedians. Man, could we get work done.
Yeah.
And public, could we get work done with Congress with more laughter and comedians inside?
Right. You know? It'd be, yeah, it's full of bullshitters anyway. It'd just be a lot more fun.
But look, like the president of the Ukraine, he was a comedian. And we had a guy from Minnesota, Al Franken.
Al Franken, yeah.
Yeah, we needed that. We need more comedians than people left all of this hatred in the office. Can you imagine what you and I could get done in Congress? Just people need money. We got printers. Take care of people.
Yeah.
Take care of people. We can just, it's a great system here. This is the greatest country in the world. Whatever people need, we got it and we'll have it.
I'm vocally political, you know, and so
of course
people,
you are.
And people will tell me, you know, like, why don't you run for office? And I say, you know, because my grandfather was the chairman of the Republican Party of our county for 30 years. And he served in a governor's cabinet in Illinois. He was the director of conservation for the state. You know, so I grew up as a kid because when my folks divorced, we moved in with my grandparents. So I got dragged to Republican pig roast, pancake breakfast, election nights, all, you know, and it's all, and I, you know, the Republican aspect of it, it's funny because now of all of his kids, there isn't a Republican left. They all, you know, as the Republican Party changed from like the party of Eisenhower into the party of lunatics.
You kids, all of you kids are going, that's some bullshit.
exactly. Now, you know, they're all, because they're out there, you know, it's just they're, well, nobody's rich. So it's like, why the hell would we be Republicans now? But I knew what politics
was. I like how you slid that in. Nobody's rich. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, relatively. But I knew what politics was. And that's why people ask me about it. And I'm saying, it's, well, first of all you do is ask for money. That's your job. My brother's a school teacher. He ran for Congress. All it was asking for money.
That's what it's all about, right?
And I just couldn't do it. It's just, and then it's like one long PTA meeting too, you know, like your actual work day is just meetings and bullshit and people talking and everybody saying the same thing. And so it's like, yeah, if I could go and actually make things happen, it would be, you know, maybe I would want to do that.
Why don't we make that requirement to run for office and go to Congress? By going to make things happen. It's kind of like, see, you and I will look at this like the Voters' Rights Bill. And sometimes, did you ever stop to think, what the hell is that all about? What is a Voters' Rights Bill? It should be one page, one card. You're born in America. You're 18. You vote.
Yep.
Just that simple.
Yep. When you turn 18, you can vote, period.
Period. That's it. You got no stipulation, no suppressions, no nothing.
Yeah.
You can vote. And, let's make it a national holiday. Let everybody vote.
Yeah.
Let everybody vote.
Or put it on a Saturday. Make it on a Saturday. Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
And just make it as easy as possible. This is the greatest thing you could do, is voice your opinion and vote. And that's why you and I should be in office, to be honest. All of us should be. Can you imagine I'm serious about the comedians, if we were to do this, because we know we're going to be out of there at 4 because we know we got a spot at 7 or 8. We're going to the show.
Got other things to do.
That's why comedians are the smartest people in the world. We do know all the social ills of the country. We see these people. We talk to these people. And we hear their problems. And we have a job that we get paid very well at. But we do it. Well, most of us would do it without getting the money that we get just because. Mm-hmm. It's satisfying to go to work for 30 minutes a night and you're done.
Yeah.
You're just bullshitting and talking and having fun.
Yeah, yeah.
But I say bullshitting once again. I got a pad here. It's a lot of homework, as you know.
Yeah. Do you have like a library of yellow pads? Do you save them? Do you have like a 1,000 yellow pads stored away somewhere?
I don't have quite 1,000. Seinfeld has 1,000. Did you see the bit that Seinfeld covered the street with his notes?
Uh-uh.
He covered an entire block with his notes on the street.
Wow.
So, we have the yellow legal pad
with
a hard cover. It's a hard cover that's not flexible. So,
right.
We have the yellow legal pad, and we just write all day long. And I take mine to the stage. I had it last night. And last night on the stage was B&B. And B&B was Branson and Bezos. These are the two guys with the ship. And I'm And I'm just going, these are two richest men in the world, right? And I don't know what this, the people start laughing. I'm the two richest men in the world. And they go up into space, okay, for 11 minutes.
Yeah.
So by the time wait a second, I went to the lunch, to the space launching, but they go up in the air, and by the time I get back to my car in the parking lot, say what?
They're down.
You're back. Say what? You're back from where you went. Why did you leave in the first place? I can't even get across town in 11 minutes. They spent all this money.
Yeah.
So I'm like, it's like the first luncheon. I don't believe they did. I don't believe they went anywhere. But well, it's amazing.
Yeah. And I mean, they go up and then they go. Well, I couldn't believe, you know, he goes up in that dildo rocket and then the rocket's gone. And then they just crash land. I mean, it was like a plane ride with a bad landing.
Stop it. All in the same setting, right?
Yeah. It was just a plane ride. You didn't go to space. You were on a plane, you know?
It was like a slingshot. Okay.
Yeah.
What goes up must come down. Listen to me. That song, What Goes Up Must Come.
Yeah,
what
yeah.
What goes up must yep. come down was longer than the actual space ride.
I know. It's ridiculous. And then the goddamn cowboy hat. You got to put on a cowboy hat. His dad's cowboy hat.
Stop.
It was three sizes too big for him. Oh,
that's
boy.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Well, now, when do you decide, all right, I can quit selling ad space and I can just do this? How long was it before that first time on stage to when you could just be a comic?
Dude, I was doing it.
Yeah.
I was selling advertising during the day, but I was on stage at night.
Yeah.
And I was on stage only 6 months in New York City, and I was killing it, and people standing ovation and everything. And I said, you know what? I'm going to go out to California, and we need some advertising from California. All of the record companies were out there. So I went out there as a salesperson. And 2 weeks, I drummed up like $500,000 to $600,000 worth of business to put on buses in New York City.
Yeah,
I put like Elton John and Donna Summer at the time. I put them down the billboards in Times Square. And I said, all the time thinking in my head, I told the bosses, we need an office in L.A.
That's convenient.
That's what I told them. That's what I told them. But in the meantime, because that's where the comedy store is. So I went out and I moved myself out and left about 2 months. And they said, Wallace, what the hell happened? You're just bringing in money like crazy. And all of a sudden, it's not working like we thought it was going to work. And I said, well, I don't know what's going on. And they said, well, we might have to make some changes. And I said, well, just... Do what you have to do. Because I was going home. I was at the comedy store every night.
Right.
So that was my big.
So sales went down once you really started to devote yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. And so we somewhat departed, and the next thing I know, I was on stage, and one night they said, "Could we talk to you for a second? I forgot his last name. He was Officer Don on Dave Osborne. Mm-hmm. You remember him? Officers, they come out in the space suit on Letterman. Used to come out in the office.
Oh, yeah, I know who you mean.
Yeah.
I don't remember his name, yeah.
Yeah, but he said, we'd like to talk to you. We're producers of the Red Fox show.
Oh, yeah.
We'd like for you to be a writer on the Red Fox show. I said, no, I don't know whether I'm in the writing. I don't know whether I'm that good. He said,
was that Sanford and Son, or did he have a variety show?
The variety show immediately after Sanford and Son on ABC.
I see.
So they said... well, we think you can. We've been watching you for a few weeks, and you've just been having a good time up on the stage. And then that was after following Richard Pryor, Jay Leno, Elaine Boozler, and Robin Williams. I just loved being on stage. You know, back in the day, we just all followed each other and just did everything. So I said to the guy, I don't know whether I'm into the writing. I know I love to perform. And then at the time, I didn't have a job. They said, well, it's $2,500 a week. And that was in 1976.
Yeah.
And I said, $2,500 a week. I said, maybe I could come up with a little something. So I went into the writer's world for a year in Red Fox. And
What was he like to work for?
He was really, I didn't get to see him a lot, to be honest. We wrote the show in the Valley.
Yeah.
We shot the show at CBS in the city.
Right.
And the show aired on ABC. So I'm like, what the hell is going on here? You know, I didn't know about how the system worked at all.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I didn't get to see Red Fox a lot because he would only show up for, even not rehearsal, he'd just show up, and he was heavily drugged.
Mm.
And I didn't know anything about drugs, and people were crazy back in the day, but it worked out, and that's, I had opportunities. That's where I first met the great Muhammad Ali, writing the show, but that's when it all came together. And then after a year, I said, you know, Red Fox are doing the jokes, but as a writer, you're always going, he got to laugh, but he should have done it the right way.
Yeah.
Let me do my joke. And so I said, after that, so I'm going to do my own joke. So I went out and I started doing the Tonight Show and all of that. Yeah. I did the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson on a Thursday. And the next night, I was in front of 17,000 people with Natalie Cole. Wow. So I never wanted to do television or movies. I don't know anything about acting or anything like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. You didn't want a sitcom. You didn't.
I just wanted to be a comedian in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
That's because I heard when we started, there was guys like Hockey Puck with Don Rickles and guys like that.
Patrick Henry. I was just going to say Don Rickles. Yeah. Yeah.
So these guys, they're making $300,000 a year. Yeah. I'm just starting as a comedian in 1976. Well, that sounds good. That's enough money for me.
Yeah, yeah.
And so
you're doing the same thing you want to do anyway. Yeah.
That's my goal, is to get to Las Vegas. And sure enough, I found myself in Las Vegas in 1979, 2 years later, after I started with opening for Diana Ross.
Yeah.
And I walked out and made so much money in Las Vegas. I walked out in front of Caesar's Palace and I said to myself, I could go back. Yep, I made it to Vegas. That's my goal. I made it to Vegas. I could go back to advertising. You know, and at that time I was making about, and even that time I was making $75,000 a year in advertising. But then I thought, not.
Yeah.
That's when the phrase not.
Yeah,
And I went on to work with Diana Ross for a year and a half. I just wanted to open, be a comedian, learn how to be a comedian. Then I went with Tom Jones for 5 years. That's all I want. I wanted to learn how to be a comic. Big houses, small houses, 70,000, 15,000 arenas, stadiums. I did it all.
Yeah.
And I can handle any room.
Do you change your act very much for the different size rooms, or do you kind of do the same thing and just...
Well, when you go out as a barometer, you got to feel, you know, when we're saying hello, a lot of people don't know what we're doing, but that we're sizing up the room, the feedback, how the speed of the room is working. I do a different set every night because you don't know what's going to happen with me.
Yeah.
I'm like, in Las Vegas, I went to Las Vegas, as you know, in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
For 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, and it turned out to be 10 years.
Yeah.
And
my ex-wife and I came and saw you while we were out there. Yeah.
And it turned out, and I owned the show. I did not work for the hotels like most entertainers do.
Yep.
I did all of the marketing. And of course, I did all of the advertising because that was my world.
Right.
I knew how to rule the advertising world in Las Vegas. I created the new thought patterns and branding in Las Vegas. I'm the first guy to put 5 trucks on the street of advertising back to back to back to back to back to back. People say, Wallace, why the hell would you put that many trucks just back to back to back going up and down Las Vegas Boulevard? And I said, why did you ask me about it?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I just wanted to be a comedian. About 2012, I'm just going like, dude. I don't know what to do next. I've conquered my goal. I made a lot of money. I don't know what to do next, but I love stand up, and I'm still doing it. And like I always say,
Do you like living in Vegas? Is Vegas a pretty good place to live?
I live there right now. I love living in Las Vegas. I don't gamble because I'm smart enough to know you can't win. Anytime you see a new hotel going up, that's not from people winning.
Okay? Yeah. Right.
That's not for me. So I know that even if you win $100,000, it could be one of the worst things that happen to you because all of a sudden you know the system. I can do it. No, you don't. They're waiting for you. But Vegas is a good place to eat and live. And if you can stand the heat, but you know, first like me, I don't go out in the heat. I'm always in the air, go downstairs, get in the car. It's a beautiful city. It's cheap. You got all the, it's actually the entertainment capital of the world.
Yeah.
Even today.
Do you end up spending a lot of time in casinos just to go to restaurants and see shows and stuff? Or is there kind of, when you're a local, you kind of live a separate life from the strip?
Most people do live a separate life from the strip, but I live in the hotels and my condo is across the street from the hotel. But I'm always working though. So let's make it perfectly clear. Yeah. I'm always working. I don't get to see a lot of shows. I get to see a few shows. I do favors when something special is happening. Like tonight that Celine Dion called, she needed me 2 nights to open for her because so much press was going on. I had to go out in 30 minutes before she came out because she was doing a lot of press. So I had that opportunity. Diana Ross, the first one that took me to Las Vegas, she didn't come back in 30 years. I reopened for her, same people.
Oh, that's great.
And I just have fun in Vegas. So I don't see, I see all the shows I want to see, but I'm pretty much working.
Yeah, yeah.
I work every night. I love working.
Now, like you said, you kind of have conquered it. So what's next for you? I mean, what do you see? I mean, now that we're out of this pandemic and, you know, you can start your life again, because I imagine you couldn't do shows.
I did not do shows.
Was that hard for you? You know, you're still writing on your yellow pad. You don't have anywhere to get it out.
Right, I did too. I'm on every Thursday night at 7 o'clock with a lady named Civil Works Live. We still do a lot of, and this morning I did Tom Papa. I still do a lot of Zooming, like I'm working with you in the podcast.
I get
these jokes out in a way. So after 18 months of being in, certainly we were talking about dealing with the pandemic, some things I would do, and, you know, just jokes I would throw, like I was trying to stay 6 feet away from myself. I was so concerned about it. You know, I would move mirrors. And I had eating strange habits, just talking trash. I was eating strange things like chicken and Cheerios. I was doing a lot of things. And I was watching television. I was crying on TV because I'm watching these TV stations like Undercover Boss. And eventually I wound up crying watching Undercover Boss. And then I watched the sad stories on The Voice and America's Got Talent. You just can't be a regular singer now. You got to have a story to go along with it.
I know.
I was incarcerated for 3 years.
Yeah, it's like tragedy porn on those.
Yeah,
places.
Right. You can't, exactly. Yeah,
you got to, you know, you can't, you know, you got to have like a, you know, a mother that was blown.
Oh,
up.
No. Oh no! My mother had a heart attack, and they said, "Why are you here?" Like, well, my mom had a heart attack, and she just her last thing she wanted to see was me to win this show on America's Got Talent. Okay, well, what are you gonna do after the show? Well, my mom is still in the car. She had the heart attack. And I'm gonna stick here.
I left it running. The AC's on. She's fine.
And I'm like, no, she's still dealing with a heart attack. I'm going to take her to the hospital.
And so I always love on those shows when they say, like, you know, I just want to say to all the people that said I couldn't make it that I'm going to make. And I think, who the fuck are these people?
What, hey, listen to me.
Like, who goes around telling people, you'll never be a singer? I where are they growing up? Like, just like Bully Town, you know?
I mean, that's a phrase I use, you know, when people say stupid things about me. If I hear one more person say, if I can do it, you can do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Bullshit, you can't do what I do. You can't do what I do. I can't
if you
do
can
what
dream
you
it, you can do it. No, no, no. You know, you sure as hell can.
He doesn't want to do.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So when people say that just drives me crazy. And that's what I pick up on things like that. The other day I talked about a lady said she felt comfortable in her own skin. So I'm thinking about it. How do you know?
Maybe you don't want to know.
You've never been in somebody else's skin.
Yeah, maybe she's been Hannibal Lecter-ing people.
Exactly. Then I try to take the joke. I know I feel much better in Oprah's skin. I feel much better in even Jeff Bezos' skin. I feel real good. Then I have to take it to the, you know, my jokes are ABC with a twist at the end. I didn't even feel better in Al Sharpton's skin. It's gonna be a little tight.
Yes.
So when people say stupid phrases, I just pick up on them. There's nothing wrong with me, but I love having fun.
Well, so what are your plans now going forward? I mean, you're in New York now. Are you gonna be there for a long time, or are you gonna try and get back to Vegas when Vegas gets open?
I'll leave. I'm still have a residence at the Westgate right now. I'm not going back until mid-September. But I have so many things. I'm the father on. Phoebe Robinson has a new TV show with ABC. I'm the father on that.
Oh, nice.
I've got like 4 TV projects out there. I'm doing so much and movies and crazy things like that. But my new program, my real show, is I have a deal with Norman Lear. You know the great Norman Lear.
Of course.
97 years old. That's our partner. And I've known him for a long time. And I had an idea. I wanted to go for him. Let's reboot Sanford and Son.
Ah, yeah.
I just wanted to pull it off now.
Yeah.
I just wanted to hear that. He said, no, you can't do that. He says, George, just be you. Do something with you. Come back. So I was with a friend of mine. His name is Dan Ewan. He helped me write my first book, Laugh It Off.
I know Dan. Yeah.
So he was telling me about his kids. You know, he has 2 kids and one, they're twins and one is a girl and one's a boy. But the boy never identified as a boy. Mm-hmm. Always knew that he was a girl inside. And so I said, Dan, you got to love this kid no matter what. I don't care what it is. You got to really, really love this kid no matter what. And having dinner, I thought a light went off in my head. Like, oh, Sanford and Son. What if I had a son at one time and we put it together that the son, I'm an old guy in Mobile, Alabama, raised a family. The son left, went to New York City to do his thing or her thing. I didn't know about it at the time.
Yeah.
Went to New York City, and 30 years later, knocks on my door. Says, "Dad, it's me." "Me who?" He says, "Edmund." I said, "Are you Edmund's wife?"
Yeah.
"So, Dad, it's me." So he has transgendered.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was very mean and then slammed the door in her face. And but she still stands there, and I have to be educated. And soon we come together on this. And not only am I going to be educated as a black father from the South, but America's going to be educated.
Yeah.
As we grow, and I'm taking it to the black church. These people, which is, you know, they got to deal with this. People, yeah. Everybody's got to live and let live.
Yeah.
And eventually I'll have her running for mayor.
Uh-huh.
And she may not win, but the awareness is there.
Yeah, yeah.
And my associate producer and partner is Laverne Cox.
Uh-huh. That's
so you
great.
See where we're going with this now.
Yeah,
so
yeah, absolutely.
And with Norman Lear, and so we hope we start shooting. And with Dan Ewan.
Yeah. That's great. I mean, that's where, I mean, I don't like preachy comedy, you know, like comedy that's like overtly political. It always just feels like choir preaching, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But this is something where, you know, it's a funny show that's about something mm-hmm. and that can actually do good. Cause that's how, you know, it's like Ellen DeGeneres comes out and the world falls apart. And then she becomes America's sweetheart. You know, like people get used to like, oh, all right, I can handle.
What did you say?
Know, I can handle a gay woman.
There's a guy named Barack Obama.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, people get used to it.
Yeah.
Now we got an African-American Jewish vice president.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. Create the awareness that everybody's okay.
Yeah. Just takes time. Yeah.
Just takes time. Yes.
Now, I imagine people ask you for advice or, you know, to get some kind of.
Yeah, because I know everything.
You know everything. It's quite obvious from talking to you.
If I don't know it, I can call Jerome Seinfeld. God knows he knows everything.
Well, what do you think, like, is, you know, sort of the point of the George Wallace story, of the Henry Wallace story?
You know, Wallace stories, it's all about living. It's all about loving. And most important, it's about laughing. I love to laugh, and I love to make people happy. I think the greatest thing in the world, and we know laughter is the greatest medicine in the world. So that's what I'm all about. It's about enjoying life. My purpose on earth is to give back.
Yeah.
And I've had so much fun. And once again, I've done everything. Name something I haven't done. I was at Dr. Martin Luther King's funeral. I've been to Nelson Mandela's cell in Robben Island, South Africa. I've been on the Great Wall of China. It's not too much I haven't done. And my best friend in the world, I'm so blessed to have the number one man in comedy. Some things are not meant to be understood, but we're just best friends. Jerry Seinfeld, I talk about him all the time because that's my best friend.
Yeah.
And he's like number one. And I talk about him on stage sometimes, how rich he is.
Yeah.
And he being my best friend and as rich as he is, he got a jet. I take advantage of it. I got a jet.
Yeah.
He got a yacht. I got a yacht.
He's got a building full of Porsches. So do you.
So do I.
I can borrow a car for sure.
But I can't get in them, so I just leave the cars alone. But the jet, I can get the jet.
The jet you can get in.
And I'm getting some laughs from him, you know, lately talking about, you know, we go to the house. His house is so big on Long Island that when you get to the gate and you punch in the security code, Waze is still giving you directions to the house. And 2,000 feet, you will have reached it. So I'm having fun. He said, "Henry, you shouldn't be talking about me like that." I said, "You shut up. And you play ping pong. You play ping pong." He was telling his daughter about it last night that, usually when you play ping pong, eventually the ball goes astray, right? So in his house, we're playing ping pong. The ball goes in another room. He says, "Don't go get it. Don't go get it." He turns around. There's a crystal bowl with 200 ping pong balls in it. 200. So yep. I'm just going like, I don't know what the hell's going on in this house. This is rich people, man. I says, I got up to pee the other night. I went to the bathroom. I came back. My bed was made, and I chopped it on my pillow. I don't know what the hell's going on in this house.
Wow.
It's just.
Are you sure you weren't at a hotel? I mean, just
that's what I'm saying, the chocolate and the bed being made.
But
So I talk about him and how, but those are my things that I can share with him. And it's when God blesses you with a good friend like that, you just can't beat it.
It's good to, you know, and like, it's nice that he is, you know, generous and shares and remembers where he came from and who he came up with.
You know? But it has nothing to do with who he is today. It has to do with he just being my friend.
Yeah.
See, I don't look at, you know, people, most people look at him and yes and that. I'm the one telling him to just shut the hell up.
You're stupid.
That's my buddy. Because he's my friend.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with who he is in America, in America TV, and making all of that money.
Yeah, I think that's always important. I mean, just from what I've witnessed in show business is that the people that don't keep people around them, that remind them who they are and that keep them grounded.
Exactly.
And that push back. Like people that don't, that they surround themselves with yes people.
Yes people.
You know, yes men and women. And it makes you nuts. It makes you crazy. It makes you so that you start to really, you know, you fart and you think it's roses, you know, everything you do is perfect and right. You know,
we tend to somewhat micromanage each other a little bit. Like we were even talking about the pandemic at this moment. And I said to Jerry, let's just wait and see what happens after 4th of July. Talk to me 2 weeks after 4th of July and we'll see if this is really under control. This is 2 weeks, 3 weeks after 4th of July. We have a little spiking going on in the country right now. So we continue to wear the mask and we're debating whether we're not going to go back to work until September. Really, real work. We're going into the clubs in and out real quickly. I still wear my mask because that's just me. But we still, he listens to me in small matters when it's time to be truthful and not be a yes person. I'm not a yes person.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Well, listen, I really appreciate you spending all this time with me today. It's a joy to talk to you.
Well, what did we talk about? Did you mention this at all?
Oh, yeah, you've got it. You've got a joke book.
Hey, Andy, what did you call it? A joke book? A joke book?
Well, it is kind of a joke book. Yeah. I mean that in the best possible sense that it's just a book of jokes. It's all like a lot of the stuff that you put out on Twitter.
Now you follow me on Twitter. Is it jokes or whatnot? Are they jokes or are they whatnots?
I think that sometimes they're a hybrid. They're a joke knot.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Joke knot is going to have to make a decision when the shit goes down between the jokes and the knots. And listen to me. This has been out there. I need more followers, too. Go to me. Tweet at Mr. George Wallace. This book is called Bullshit and Whatnot. It's 1995. Did you know I put a book out? A hardcover is $140, Andy?
No, I didn't.
The hardcover is $140. People say, why would you do something stupid like that? I just thought at the time it was 140 characters.
Yeah.
For tweeting.
Yeah.
And I just said, do you know people are buying $150 hardcover for their desk, for their tabletops?
Yeah.
It's amazing. But this is 1995. And you get this from me, georgewallace.net. Okay, georgewallace.net. You can't get it on Amazon.
Okay.
If you get it on Amazon, you wind up sponsoring a ship going up. I want my money, okay? That shit was prime.
Right.
That shit was prime, trust me.
This is farm to table. Farm to table right here.
So it's about the funny little jokes, how poor I was when I was a kid. Things I'll straight up do. Like I'll straight up take a flea to a farmer's market. And I'll take a farmer to a flea's market. I don't give a shit. I don't play by the rules. I'll eat a cupcake out of a pan and pancakes out of a cup. I don't give a shit. Those things in here like that. Even my first time just seeing E.T. just a few months back, last year rather. And it's just kind of like, I didn't know, you know, if my kids had an alien in the room, I'd kick your ass, calling home, making long distance calls. My parents would kill me. All kinds of things like that in the book. It's just things like I'd straight up drink a half a glass of whole milk and a whole glass of half and half. I don't play by the rules. I don't give a shit. I did that one time. I said, I'll drink a half a glass of whole milk and a whole glass of half and half. A lady in the audience said, Mr. Wallace, if you drink a half a glass of whole milk and a whole glass of half and half, you may not give a shit, but you're going to take one. So when people start... And the replies in the book, that's what's funny. What I say is cute, but the replies.
Oh, that's great. Awesome. It's got that's wonderful.
Shout out to the top fives in the world. The replies so it's a lot of fun. So get that book.
GeorgeWallace.net, everybody.
Get on there.
Yeah.
You have been so wonderful. I don't know what if we talked about anything today. I guess you figured out where I came from and where I'm going and what
I
want to do, right?
That's sort of the point of this. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've enjoyed you much, and we can talk about so much. But What you need to do is come visit it and look at this nice view of New York City I'm looking at right now.
I got to take you up on that.
I got to walk a mile. I'm going to walk a mile through the park.
Oh, nice.
There's nothing like Central Park, ladies and gentlemen. You get a chance to come to New York City, and you're going to enjoy Central Park. That's my office. And I'm looking over. If I get up and stand up, I see Strawberry Fields forever. That's another stupid thing about New York City. Ain't no strawberries in Strawberry Fields. There ain't no park on Park Avenue. Mm-mm. Madison Square Garden is not square.
Oh, it's not round. A garden. It's not a garden. That's
it's
for
not
sure.
a garden either. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not even on Madison.
Yeah.
So that's my head, little crazy thoughts out of my head. And we just love to have fun. Yeah. I love you. There's absolutely nothing you can do about it.
And I love you too, George. And thank you so much for coming on the show. And thank you all out there for listening. And we will be back at you next week.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
The Three Questions with Andy Richter is a Team Coco and Earwolf production. It is produced by Lane Gerbig, engineered by Marina Pais, and talent produced by Galitza Hayek. The associate producer is Jen Samples, supervising producer Aaron Blair, and executive producers Adam Sachs and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Cody Fisher at Earwolf. Make sure to rate and review The Three Questions with Andy Richter on Apple Podcasts. Can't you tell my love's a growing?
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.
March into spring with this unbeatable deal from Breezeline. Get reliable, fiber-powered 1-gig internet for $59.99 per month, plus a $150 gift card and price lock guarantee. This deal gets even better with a free modem, free installation, and free Wi-Fi your way home. Safeguard your network from cyber threats and manage user access for all connected devices with this amazing offer. Act now. Terms and conditions apply. Offer expires May 6, 2024. Learn more at breezeline.com.